We've created an animosity. We can say we hate the sin but love the sinner. But I'm telling you, really honestly, if we strip it back, at times it is hate the sin and hate the sinner too. That's not the gospel.
This is Focus on the Family, and that's Focus President Jim Daly speaking to a group of college students recently. I'm John Fuller, and Jim, that comment likely took some people by surprise, but I think you're right that historically, our actions as Christ followers, as Christians, haven't always demonstrated that love and grace that Jesus so often talked about.
I think it's one of the great weaknesses of the church today, John, in that we find it difficult to recognize the errors of our ways and apologize for them. And that's one of the most important things that we need to do because it makes us real. It makes us more accessible to people and hopefully the message of the gospel more accessible. And it's certainly, it's just the right way to approach things with truth and transparency. Earlier this week in USA Today, they ran an article where I talked about that. So often we talk about hating the sin and loving the sinner. But in many circles, I think we're becoming so polarized in the country. Yeah, we hate the sin, and guess what? We do hate the sinner, too, just like I said in that piece. So what we want to talk about today is somebody who has that kind of courage, and I'm excited about our program today.
Well, we are going to link, by the way, over to that USA Today piece from focusonthefamily.com/radio. Now, our guest today is someone who writes for that newspaper as a columnist, and Jim, you alluded to something she did that really was very, very courageous.
It was. In USA Today, Kirsten Powers, she talked about the underreporting of the horrific situation in Philadelphia with Dr. Gosnell, and this is an abortionist who just began to take literally life into his own hands and doing things that we'll describe in a minute. But the media has not been covering this. And Kirsten had enough courage as a part of the media to step forward and to talk about that. And Kirsten, it's wonderful to welcome you here to Focus on the Family.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, it does take courage to recognize when things aren't being done in an appropriate way. And in this case, it shocked you that a story of this magnitude was not being reported. Tell us what happened.
Well, basically, I knew about the case from when he was arrested. It got a little bit of media coverage, but then I didn't really, you know, recently I hadn't heard anything about it. And a friend of mine who is pro-life sent me some of the stories about the trial, and to be honest, I didn't even really look at them when she sent them. I was going back through my email, cleaning out my email box, last Wednesday. And I opened the emails and I started reading them and I started going to the local news coverage that she sent to me. And I just couldn't believe it. I just thought, how could I not have heard about this? This doesn't seem possible. I mean, I consume an unbelievable amount of media every single day.
Well, and to let people know, you're prepping for shows. You're often on O'Reilly's show on Fox and Hannity, and you're on the Sunday program with Chris Wallace. You do a lot of reporting, so you're having to keep up to speed on things.
Exactly. So. Yeah, and I write a column for the Daily Beast. And so my job is to know what's going on. And so I was really shocked. I immediately emailed my editor at USA Today and said, I want to write on this. And he said, great, let's do it for Friday. So I sort of went on with my day. And now, remember, I hadn't really been following this very closely. And then I get an email at 3 o'clock and he said, we want to run it tomorrow. So can you file it in 2 hours?
2 hours.
And so I wrote it. And my editor's amazing. He pulled everybody he could find in the newsroom to fact check it and to just make sure everything was completely airtight. And it ran the next day.
When you're looking at that kind of a story as a journalist, what do you think is happening? I tend to think it's because it's just not front and center. And the journalists and the media tend to separate these things. But here is a rather sensational story where 7 babies have been murdered. That's the allegation.
Right.
And one woman, maybe more, that lost their life due to his abortion procedures. Why would that not strike people in the media as a story similar to others that we see as equally important for the nation to know about? What do you think's going on?
I don't have a great answer because you can never know what motivates people. You can often, people make a lot of accusations, but the reality is we don't really know what motivates people. And so I was actually asked this on Special Report the day my column ran. And I said, I really don't know. Someone needs to ask. Hmm. So a woman named Molly Hemingway, who writes a blog, Get Religion, she did. She went around and she asked some of the health reporters that normally cover abortion-related issues, why didn't you cover this? The Washington Post reporter wrote back, I'm a policy reporter. I don't cover local crime stories.
Oh, my.
Now, that says there is a bias. Now, what is the bias? I can't say for sure unless she tells us what the bias is. But if you look at the media at a, more broadly, Jodi Arias, who is a woman who killed her husband, who no one's ever heard of, I mean her boyfriend, no one's ever heard of this woman, is national news.
24/7 on
Good
some
Morning
cables.
America has done a 10-part series on this. Hmm. Now, just take abortion out of this situation. There are 7 dead babies. How that is not a national news story, and this woman killing her boyfriend is a national news story, Someone needs to explain that. I can't understand where the news judgment is here.
And it is a fair question to ask, and that's once again why I think you had great courage as a journalist. You come on Fox as the Democrat. Mm-hmm. You're the one sparring with them about other issues that we're probably going to disagree about. But in this area of life, there is agreement. And I think when you say this is about the death of 7 babies, these are babies that were viable. Mm-hmm. They were beyond the gestation period. In Pennsylvania, it's 24 weeks. That abortion beyond that is illegal.
Right.
And Dr. Gusnell would insert scissors in the back of that baby's head. And I'm sorry to say this, but we need to. Mm-hmm. And snip, as he would call it, allegedly, the spinal cord and kill these children. These were children.
Yes.
And that is what is so amazing about this case, and maybe why there's not a lot of illumination about it in the media, because it does expose a great weakness that, guess what? These are children. These are human beings.
Well, and so what the pro-abortion rights people will say is, there's no reason to cover this because it's illegal what he was doing. So, they were past 24 weeks. It's illegal in Pennsylvania. Well, of course, it's illegal for Jodi Arias to kill her boyfriend, too. So that doesn't really make any sense.
Right. It sounds like cover.
We cover crime, right? It's illegal. The fact that this was illegal isn't the point. The other thing is one of the babies that is, and if you read the grand jury report, they actually have pictures of the babies. And one of them was 20 weeks. That's actually legal. The only thing that was illegal about what he did is the geography. It was 12 inches in one direction, it's a murder. 12 inches in the other direction, it's an abortion. Mm-hmm. So I saw quite a few journalists actually who that really got through to them. They realized, wait a minute, we got to talk about this. This is not okay. And that baby survived. Mm-hmm. That baby was 20 weeks, and that's legal. You can legally abort that baby. And we can see that it survived.
Well, I think that's the great challenge here is this case is opening up the real dark side of the abortion industry.
Right.
And those that want to protect it don't want this generally known, I think. That's my opinion.
Well, I think that's right. I think what they like to say during whenever this is debated, recently there was a debate in Florida over the Infant Born Alive Act.
Right.
And in that debate, they had a Planned Parenthood representative who was asked, well, what happens if the baby survives? And she said, well, that's a decision between the doctor and the mother.
What does that mean?
Yeah. And so then Planned Parenthood came out later and said, no, of course, we would support the child having getting medical treatment in that situation, but it hardly ever happens. I'm paraphrasing. I can't remember exactly what they said, but they basically portrayed it as this extremely rare circumstance. Which raises in my mind a question. How many circumstances like this are you okay with? Because if you're saying it almost never happens, that means it happens sometimes. So how many babies above the number 0 are allowed to be born alive and left to die on a table? Mm-hmm. And that is just never discussed. It's just this, well, it just hardly ever happens, so we don't need to worry about it. Mm-hmm. Well, it happens. And it should be, you should have to be required to give that baby life-sustaining treatment. It should be admitted as a patient. And right now, we're told, no, that's up to the doctor and to the mother. Mm-hmm.
One of the things, Kirsten, that this I think it helps me think about is the way that we have reduced the early stages of human life. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the impacts of abortion is that we look the other way as a culture mm-hmm. and that we kind of dehumanize the child to where you hear stories where teenagers have a child in the bathroom at a prom and they leave it in the trash can, mm-hmm. things like that.
Yeah.
It to where there's no emotional attachment to the child because we've dehumanize the baby inside the mother's womb.
Right.
Do you think that's a fair comment?
I think we have devalued life, but I also think, at least when it comes to late-term abortion, most Americans don't support it. And we have this health exception that allows basically doctors like Dr. Tiller, the one who was killed, he was performing the late-term abortions and, you know, he was using this health exception, which is if the woman is depressed,
yes.
or what, you know, then it's okay. But that's not acceptable. You know, there's no circumstance except to, in my mind, to save the life of the mother. You know, and even in that situation, I personally would not do it. But you know, where you can say it's okay to be dismembering a child, and we just don't have a real honest debate about it. And I really do believe that if most Americans knew about this and knew that people were able to get abortions by saying they were depressed of a 6-month-old fetus or older, they would say, that's not okay. I
right.
really believe that. I just think it's a lack of information. I don't think it's a lack of valuing life. I think most Americans would value that
life. And that really gets back to the point that lack of information is because people have perhaps a different perspective and therefore it's not talked about, again, because we don't want to touch on these very tender issues that a lot of women deal with, mm-hmm. whether or not to do this. And, you know, we in the Christian community, I think we have to do so much more than we're currently doing to show the love for not only that mm-hmm. baby, but also for that woman in
right.
desperate need.
Yes.
It's critical for us to
yes.
do that.
Okay.
Kirsten, one of the messages that I'm trying to get out through Focus on the Family and through Refocus, the book I wrote, is how do we really reflect the character of God, which is love those who hate you.
Yeah.
Pray for those who persecute you. Mm-hmm. Don't get into quarrels. Through gentleness and kindness, instruct a person who doesn't know. I think in the New Testament, there's so much teaching around that about the heart for the unbeliever, for the sinner. Mm-hmm. It's not that we lord it over them that, you know, they got to act a certain way. We need to reach out to them mm-hmm. in kindness.
Right. Well, I mean, ultimately, we're supposed to be servants, right? So if you always have the posture that you're supposed to be serving other people, servants don't wag their fingers at people and lecture them and put them down and demonize them, which is unfortunately what I see a lot of Christians doing. And I, of course, come from a world, my family are liberals, they're Democrats, they're atheists, and they're some of the best people that I know.
Mm.
My brother is an incredible father. My sister-in-law is an incredible mother. Wonderful people. So I would just suggest people who don't know unbelievers or don't know sort of nominal Christians, maybe they don't quite fit your theology, you should become friends with them and get to know them, including pro-choice people who are wonderful people. You know, and it's not that they love killing babies and the way that it's portrayed. They really believe they're helping women and they, you know, that is their motivation. I'm not saying there aren't people in the pro-abortion rights movement who are mean and say terrible things and act badly, but that's not a justification for somebody in the pro-life movement to do it, you know, especially if they're supposed to be reflecting Jesus to the world, you know, to say, oh, well, I was treated so badly, so I'm going to do it to them. It's like, no, turn the other cheek. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not how you're supposed to behave. So, you know, I just think there's a lot of I'm amazed sometimes of when I hear people talk about pro-choice people or talk about atheists or whatever in a certain way. It's puzzling to me.
I think one of the great things we're lacking in the Christian community is humility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we come in with a very
Absolutely.
Righteous attitude and there's no humility. How do we actually reduce the number of abortions?
Mm-hmm.
And there are many people, again, all over, left, right, and center, that actually could aspire to that.
Right.
I've talked with them.
Yes.
That's a good starting place. And
mm-hmm.
it begins the tipping point for people to believe that life is in the womb and this is human life. It's just not as developed as what you see as a child at 5 and 10.
Yeah.
But we have to do everything we can to try to work across the aisle and across ideological aisles to really bring life to this issue.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
And Kirsten, it would seem to me that kind of of posture of humility and of not finger pointing, but asking really good questions that are sometimes very hard to think about, mm-hmm. characterizes that article of yours, and we'll link to that, by the way, at focusonthefamily.com/radio. And also, I'm just curious about that. What kind of reception have you had to the article people on both sides of the debate?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think conservatives who are pro-life love it, and that's expected. But I have gotten quite a few emails from people who, I would not ever say who they are, but who are liberal people at liberal outlets saying, thank you for writing that. That was a great article. So that's why I say I don't think that people often confuse the activists with liberals or the activists with Democrats in the same way. It happens to the other side. You know, evangelicals get kind of tarred with the worst thing that the worst, you know, person said. But there are a lot of reasonable people and in the end they may not come around, you know, but you can definitely talk to them and who are open to listening to what you have to say. And I think that you have to just keep on making your case. Just even if you're not making any progress, you just keep on making your case. And the other thing I would say is, my views on abortion really have almost nothing to do with believing in God. It's a pure ethical, scientific decision. And I was very, very pro-abortion rights before I became a believer. But I didn't switch my position because I read the Bible and thought it was in the Bible. I did it because I started to meet all these people who were pro-life, and they kind of piqued my curiosity about it. And I thought, well, these people seem pretty smart, and they don't seem like they hate women, and they don't, you know. And I started doing research, and I did a lot of research, scientific research, and I was shocked at what I didn't know. I did not know that a fetus has a heartbeat at 3 weeks. I mean, I learned that at the Bodies exhibit, not in the Bible. You know, so that's what I'm saying. I don't even know that you have to you have to talk to people in their language. And if somebody doesn't believe in God, you can't convince that. That's just not the way to approach it. You got to just approach it from a pure ethical standpoint and say, look, what kind of society are we that we allow people to dismember a baby, you know, inside the womb that if the mother wanted and gave birth to, we would do everything we could to save it. You know, let's just think about that. Like, what does that say about us?
I mean, it's an excellent question, Kirsten, let me peel this back a little bit, talk a bit more about you, if I can. Your background, you talk about being raised Episcopalian, you're an atheist. We did a program not long ago, John, with a woman who grew up in a pastor's home and went off to an Ivy League university, became an atheist, and was one of the debaters. It was really a good program. If you didn't hear it, download it at focusonthefamily.com. Yeah. She was very candid about that experience as an atheist and then later became a Christian because she found emptiness in atheism. She said there are a lot of just mean people being mean to each other that all thought they were smarter than each other. I don't mean to denigrate anyone. But in that context, you lived it. What was that journey like for you going through that religious experience?
Yeah. My story is very different in that way because I was not looking for it. Last thing in the world I wanted to be was a Christian, honestly. And I had grown up Episcopalian, but you know, not evangelical or in any way or born again or any of those kinds of things. It was a very high church kind of mainline Protestant Episcopalian. And I did believe in God, but there it wasn't anywhere near what would sort of come to happen to me, I guess. Went away to college. Whatever little faith I had, I lost. Ended up graduating from college. I worked in the Clinton administration. You know, all my friends were secular, liberal. So I really got even more deeply into just an incredibly secular world. And now all my friends were basically atheists, you know, or if they had any kind of spirituality, they were very hostile towards religion, you know, Christianity in particular. So I didn't really have any interest in it. And I started dating somebody who went to Tim Keller's church, Redeemer Presbyterian in New York
Tim's
City.
Tim's a good friend.
And I, out of curiosity, went with him. But I told him up front, I'll never become a Christian. I'll never it's never going to happen. And I went to his church. And I'd say in about a year, probably in like 6 or 7 months, I started to think this seems – the weight of history is more on the side of this than not. You know, I started to just sort of see that, like, this is not even a – like, he'd made such a strong case that I just intellectually actually felt like it's not even smart to reject this. You know, it just doesn't seem like a good – intellectual decision. Mm-hmm. So I think I sort of nominally thought, yeah, you know, I'm like that, but I'm not one of those crazies, you know. Right. And then I really, I mean, it was just sort of like God sort of invading my life. It was very unwelcome and I didn't like it. And, you know, all of a sudden I started having a lot of different experiences where I just felt, you know, God doing a lot of things in my life. It's kind of hard to describe, but I did just have this moment of the scales falling off of my eyes and just saying, it's just totally true. Like, I don't even have any doubt.
Mm-hmm. I think all of us that are Christian understand exactly what you're saying because we go through similar experiences.
Rather than what I would have thought it would be like, which is, you know, the clouds part and the angels sing and it's all so wonderful, it was horrible because all of a sudden I thought, well, what am I supposed to do now? You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be one of these people. And I'm not a Republican and I don't want to, you know, I just had nothing in common with them and I didn't know any Christians. And so I was really quite freaked out and really resisted it, frankly, for a while. And I thought maybe I'm having an episode or some sort of bad, you know, I really thought this is like a phase and it's going to pass. And so I did have, you know, I knew a couple people. Actually, one of them was Eric Metaxas, was one of my first Christian friends.
Author of Bonhoeffer.
Yeah. So he was friends with the boyfriend who took me to Redeemer. And so I knew him before I was a believer. So I called Eric up and Eric was very helpful. And so I started to make friends and it started, but it took me a couple years really to kind of accept it. You know, my family didn't like it. My parents were professors. They're not believers. You know, so, and it was just kind of unseemly.
That's an interesting journey, though. I mean, it really is. It's like God was after you.
Yeah.
And working on your heart.
Yeah. It was very invasive.
And it sounds, Kirsten, by the way, this is Kirsten Powers you're listening to on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller. And it sounds like the kind of courage that enabled you to really come to Christ and embrace that which you said you would never, ever do really was similar to what you needed to have when you went after this story.
See, I don't really feel like I have any courage. It's interesting when you say that. And even when describing like when I became a Christian, I just gave in. You know, it wasn't courageous. I didn't have any choice. I kept trying to not believe and I kept just couldn't avoid it. It was, if I could have avoided it, I would have. There's nothing convenient about it in my life, in the world that I live in. It's not like living in the South or living somewhere where everybody's a Christian. I live in a world where nobody's a believer, you know, and so you don't. It's not normal. Even among people who go to church, it's not really normal to really be reading your Bible every day or, you know, that's not considered normal behavior. So I don't really feel like I was courageous at all. But writing this column, I also don't really feel like to me, it was just obvious that it needed to be written about.
Well, but the distinction is, and again, this gets back right to the top of the program, where we need the courage to be honest with ourselves about what we see in front of us, how we're behaving in that regard. And I think one of the concerns I have, certainly in the Christian community, is our inability to do that. We get on the position that we're so right that we fail to see where we may be wrong.
Right.
And that's what I loved about your piece, because you're in that world. And for a person that would, there would be a caricature of you, unfortunately, from the right, saying, well, she fits in this box.
A certain stereotype.
A certain stereotype. Mm-hmm. And yet here you are, a woman who God is pursuing you. You've given your life to the Lord. Mm-hmm. He's awakening those things in you. And yet we throw stones at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I just appreciate the fact that you were able to say it like it was, like a real journalist should say. Why aren't we covering this story? And I think in that regard, that's where people within the culture, and I don't care if you're left, right, or center, people in the culture need to be calling it as it is, not the way they want it to be.
Right.
And that's what I appreciate about what you had to say. And I think God will use this to open the hearts of other people that maybe don't see it the way we see it, those in the pro-life movement, to give them a little pause to say, okay, why is that 12-inch delivery making the difference here? Because that baby is a baby in the womb, and we need to protect that life.
Right.
I think when we look at the tragedies, Kirsten, like in Boston earlier this week, I mean, that is horrible to hear about that 8-year-old who died. I mean, that is heavy on my heart.
Yeah.
Or you hear about Newtown and what happened there. What it is saying to me is that what we're desperately lacking in the culture is character.
But what you're talking about there, Jim, really is the depravity of the human heart, which those of us in the Christian community have tried to confront personally. We've read in the scriptures about the fact that we are all sinful creatures. It does seem that there are cycles where it just becomes so much more obvious in the culture, and now seems one of those times.
Well, it's like the scripture talks about that, you know, who knows where we're at in the process of the end times and all those kinds of things. But it talks about how people's hearts will grow cold, that evil will become good and good evil and haters of good and lovers of evil and all those kind of descriptions. And it definitely feels like when we can't understand the sanctity of life, that a baby in a mother's womb is a precious thing, something to protect, something to nurture, something to inspire, that it's not excess baggage. It's not just a blob of tissue. I think there's where we need particularly boys and girls in high school to understand what this means. What does it mean to be pregnant? What does it mean to have a baby? We don't talk like that. We talk about biology and all that. We don't talk about the sanctity, the very sanctity of human life where we're made in God's image.
Yeah.
And that's
hard. I actually feel like we remember when Roe v. Wade was passed, we didn't know what we know now.
Right.
Sonograms didn't even exist. You know, we now have a generation of children who grow up looking at pictures of their siblings, and it's a little harder to convince them that this is just a blob and that there's nothing there.
Well, it's very well said, and that's one of the great contradictions that we are, you know, trying in our way at Focus on the Family to try to make people aware, again, of the beauty of life and the importance to protect it. And that's true with marriage and other things, just the family and how important it is to culture. Kirsten Powers, you are really one of a kind, and I appreciate the fact that you're doing what you're doing with The Daily Beast on Fox News. And I'm thankful God has pursued you and has corralled you and brought you into the kingdom. But keep doing what you're doing. And thank you again. You may not call it courage. I certainly do. Thank you for standing for life.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
And if I could turn to those who don't know the Lord, and this has been inspirational to you, or perhaps raised questions in your heart about what are they really talking about, can I encourage you to call us at Focus on the Family? We have people that are here. We want to talk with you. If you've suffered through the tragedy of abortion or another family issue, contact us. We have counselors who are standing by ready to talk with you, who want to help you get through this issue in your life. And again, we're so appreciative of Kirsten joining us.
And you can get in touch when you call 800, the letter A, and the word family, 800-232-6459. Or we have a counselor referral tool and some details there for you, including links, as I said earlier, to Kirsten's article and that article, Jim, about Focus on the Family that appeared earlier this week in USA Today. Just stop by focusonthefamily.com/radio to find those. Well, our special thanks to Jim Sanders and the team here at Ambassador Advertising Agency in Southern California for allowing us the use of their facilities for this program, which was provided by Focus on the Family. And on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team here, thanks for listening in. I'm John Fuller, hoping you have a great weekend and inviting you back on Monday when we'll hear about surviving a spiritual mismatch in marriage and once again turn our hearts toward home.